This is the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance. Live local talk that matters to you. Now, here are Denise and Hunter, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Welcome, everybody, to this Tuesday edition of Newsmakers at Noon. I am Denise Quinn.
And this is Hunter Newton.
And it is Tuesday, which means it is Real Estate Insights Tuesday. Joining us in the studio is Amy McLeod from the McLeod Group, Keller Williams. And by phone, Grant Eggleston. He's a loan officer with Envoy Mortgage. Welcome to you both.
Hello.
Hello.
Thank you.
It's good to have you both. Okay. Oh, sorry. It's smoky over here. I think I have a little lag in my connection, too. I hope we don't have any gremlins today. So again, Grant's first time on the show. And so we're going to dive right in.
He's long time listener, first time caller.
Of course, Grant has... Yay, we love that. Grant, you got over 20 years of experience in all areas of lending, including conventional FHA and VA loans. So you are the perfect guy to have on the show today to talk to us about the state of lending today.
Well, thank you for having me. And yeah, I've been doing this for over 20 years. So I like to say that I've seen it all, but I still get surprised, at least once a quarter by something I've never seen. So yeah, it's one of those things where people keep waiting for rates to come down. There are still people who think that rates are COVID era stuff, but the reality is they're staying pretty steady, and I don't see them going down anytime soon. And even if they do, they go down a little bit, but they'll come right back up. So it's one of those things where rate should be less about whether you want to buy it, because affordability is better today than it has been in the last several years.
So those people that are sitting on the sidelines waiting for, like the rates of 2 and 3, they're kind of out of luck.
Yeah, the reality is, unless we have a global pandemic, we're not seeing those rates ever again. I honestly think that rates should live in the high five range, but with inflation being where it is, it's going to take us a while to get back down there.
Yeah. Well, I'd rather skip the global pandemic and keep a little bit higher rates. Thanks very much.
Yeah. Don't jinx us. Don't jinx us.
Grant, so anything crossing your radar that you think people should know about, Grant?
I'm sorry, what?
I think, go ahead, Amy. You had a question.
Yeah, Grant, could you share what today's current rates are generally? And then if you'd share about some of the creative opportunities that we have to help buyers.
Yeah. So today you're looking in the mid to high sixes, whether it's conventional or FHA. And I went back. I'm a numbers nerd. I track these things. And before we went on air, Denise had mentioned something about 2023. And, my numbers go all the way back to 2021. So I look back and there are lulls and there are peaks. And, where we are today is basically, like I said, in the mid to high sixes, both for conventional and FHA. And it's exactly where we were in May. And it's ironically exactly where we were in March. So, you get a little bit of a lull, a little dip, but then it comes right back up. And then in terms of creative financing, there's a couple ways around this, because clearly, to buy a house, you need a down payment and closing costs. And in some cases, we've been able to find ways where the borrowers come in with only paying for their appraisal, because they do a down payment assistance program, and that covers the down payment. And then you can get the seller to give some seller concessions to help cover closing costs. So we actually just had one close last month where the borrower paid for the appraisal, and that was it. Down payment assistance here locally is a really viable option. And, we have local stuff, but we also have the national stuff that everybody else does. It's a good way to get somebody in to take advantage of the opportunities that are in the market. Because a couple of years ago, sellers weren't giving seller concessions. And now, because inventory is at its highest point in I think almost 6 years, a lot of sellers are giving some concessions because they're trying to sweeten the deal a little bit. So down payment assistance is a great way of doing that. It's a traditional loan, an FHA loan. You know, traditionally it's an FHA loan on the first mortgage, and then there is a grant that is either repayable or payable as a second lien to cover the 100% financing. And you know, it's one of those things that there's no way of saying that one loan fits everybody, because you look at credit score, you look at debt to income ratio. And so it's really, I just say there's always the next fork in the road. You find out what the person, what their individual situation is like, and then you go down that path, and then you find the next thing, and you go to this path. And so eventually every borrower finds their way towards the preferred loan. And sometimes you can go to 5% as a down payment to help cover your closing costs as well. Another option is, there is a creative financing too for, you know, I just did one where, the borrower provided their tax returns and they, didn't show any income. Well, they were a newer company and as such showed some losses. So I said, hey, great. Send me your bank statements. And there are bank statement options where they look at all of the deposits. And they show that they're, you know, personal or business, and they add them all up, and that's your income. And that couple just closed on a house last week, even though their taxes showed losses. We looked at the bank statements, 12 months of bank statements, and it showed that it showed consecutive deposits, and that was the income that they were able to use. So, you know, those are two scenarios of being creative. We don't just look at one thing. We look at the big picture to say, hey, how can we provide financing for anybody? Now, not to say that it works every time, but in these cases, it did.
I think the key to what Grant's saying is that, you know, like he doesn't quote exact interest rates because each scenario is different. Mm-hmm. And what's even if you're not ready right now, having a conversation with a reputable loan officer is really important, because Grant can look at your picture and what's going on, and then we can map out a plan to get you across the finish line. But just sitting back and lamenting that there's no affordable housing, there's no way I'm ever going to, I hear this all the time. It makes me want to sick. There's no way I'll ever be able to afford a home, or there's no way my kids will ever be able to afford a home. That's just not so. It's just not so. And you just need a creative lender like Grant to help you.
Well, and I like, because for self-employed, I think a lot of everyone thinks you got to have W-2 income. And if you're self-employed, it provides different challenges. So I did not know that you would go look at the income and the balance and the deposits and things like that. That's really good information, because a lot of people may be thinking, well, I'm self-employed and I have no way to prove it. But you do. There's lots of ways to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we no longer live in the world, you know, that got us in trouble during the crisis. They had stated loans, which were you could state your income, and you know a lot of self-employed people would just state how much they made, but not provide any documentation, and that's, you know, ultimately what got us in trouble. Now the issue is, if you're self-employed, you have to show your income. You know, it's the proverbial, you can't have your cake and eat it too. You have to document the income in order to use it.
That makes total sense, though, especially from a lender perspective. You don't want somebody saying, you know, I make $300,000. Okie dokie, good enough for me.
They were doing that, some of them. Not Grant, though.
No. Was that kind of, well, back those in 2008 people, a lot of when those everything people are crashed? No longer in bed. Yeah, I bet. All right, let's go ahead and take our first break. It's Real Estate Insights Tuesday with Amy McLeod, and we've got Grant Eggleston joining us on the phone. You're listening to Newsmakers at Noon on 1430 KYKN.
Now back to the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers at Noon is brought to you by Color Tile of Salem and Miller's Barbecue and Catering.
Alrighty, welcome back, everybody. Okay, so Amy, I saw somebody toasted out today, probably another realtor, I don't know, kind of looking at the interest rates from 2023 till now, and she kind of commented, you know, they're really not moving. Everything's kind of staying pretty stable. So those that are waiting for the unicorn years to come back, probably not your best bet. So talk to us about, you know, the most expensive decision is probably doing nothing.
Yeah. People ask me all the time, should I wait until prices come down? Should I wait till the interest rate falls? And my answer is usually another question. How's that waiting work so far for you? Because our prices haven't been screaming up like they did in the unicorn years during COVID, but they have been going up 1 or 2%. So over the last 3 years, we've seen a price increase of about 5 to 6%. So let's take a real life example. Let's say there was a house that's worth $450,000 today. And we look backwards 6 years ago in 2020. We weren't quite in the peak of the market, but it was hot. It was as soon as we got through kind of the initial COVID March through June, the same home likely sold back then for about $325,000. That means that somebody who bought that home 6 years ago gained roughly $125,000 equity from appreciation alone.
Wow.
So they weren't trying to become wealthy. They simply bought a home. And now let's go back 10 years and around 2016, that same home would have sold for about $215,000, and today it's worth $450,000. Living in a house for 10 years, right? That's an increase of approximately $235,000, more than double. So if you think about that, over $200,000 in wealth created simply by owning a home. Okay, one more time. Let's go back to 2009. People were terrified. The news was that the market's collapsing. People wondered if prices would ever recover. We're still seeing the effects of people not fixing their houses up because if it's not appreciating, I'm not going to put money into it.
Right.
Well, those that did, that same home would have sold back then for around $140,000. Today, if you kept it up, $450,000. That's roughly $310,000. And just remember, that's just appreciation. It doesn't include the mortgage principal that was paid down over those 10 years. It doesn't include tax advantages that homeowners enjoy. And it doesn't include any rent they didn't have to pay somewhere else. It was just going down the drain. So this is the point. Nobody buys at the perfect time. Almost nobody. You might get it lucky. The people who bought in 2009 didn't know it was the bottom. The people who bought in 2016 didn't know the market was about to explode. And the people who bought in 2020 had friends telling them they were paying too much because they didn't know that we would hit the peak. We wouldn't hit the peak till 2022. Yet history has rewarded every one of those buyers. And one of my favorite sayings is this, is people spend too much time trying to time the market instead of spending time in the market. Because real estate has never been about perfection. It's about participation. You know, we've talked a lot about you've got to get your start, like the camel with his nose under the tent, so that you can take advantage of inflation that we've been facing since we went off the gold standard in 1971. You have got to get your start. So will you have ups and downs? Yep. Will it be a little scary? Probably. I've lived through multiple markets cycles, but over the decades, well-located real estate has consistently built wealth for ordinary families. The only people who get hurt in real estate are those people who have to sell in a down market. So as an example, those people that bought in 2022, honestly, they have barely earned enough equity to cover their closing costs. So if you have to sell, all right, you're going to take your licks. But in general, we owned our house through 2008, 2009, the whole downturn. And then it started to increase. Frankly, it started increasing in 2015, 2016. So if you're waiting because you think you can predict the perfect moment, you really want to be careful. The cost of waiting isn't just today's interest rates. Interest rates, you know, if they go down, if we have some other magical unicorn event, you can refinance. I mean,
yeah, right.
Yeah, all of us who had started our lives at 18%, we refinanced all the way down. So the cost of waiting isn't just today's interest rate. It's the appreciation you'll never get. It's the principal you never paid down. It's another year of paying someone else's mortgage through rent. And years from now, very few homeowners will say, I wish I had waited longer. Far more people tell me something that more like, I wish I would have bought sooner. And the history of real estate suggests that they're correct.
Yeah.
So.
And when you talk about perfect, I mean, what is a perfect time to buy real estate look like?
I don't know. I don't
Explain
know.
Explain that. What does that look like?
I heard from a fellow real estate agent once, and she said, I prefer to buy in the market I know, not the one that I don't know.
Yeah.
And if you just think about what is it two people are trying to buy, or the two things people are trying to game. One is price. And generally, we see price appreciating. For the last 4 years, our prices have been relatively flat, but still creeping up just a little bit, 1-2%. Or they're trying to game interest rate. Well, when you know that prices are creeping up, I would rather have a house bought today at today's prices. And then if by some miracle, interest rates drop in the low sixes or the low high fives, then you can refinance and take advantage of that interest rate, but with 2026 prices.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, most of the mortgage companies are offering a lot of them. The one time, is that still a thing?
One time express refinance.
Yeah.
It doesn't save you all the costs. At Envoy, and Grant can correct me, at Envoy, it saves you the lending fees, a lot of the junk fees. You still have to pay title and escrow and recording, but that is so small. Some of them have restrictions that it has to be done in the first year. But if the interest rate changes enough, and these are all calculations you can do with your loan officer. You want to calculate what's the amount my payment will fall? How much does it reduce? How many years do I think that I'm going to live in the house? And then let's say you're going to be there 2 years. That's 24 months. Let's say you had a $100 reduction. So now it's $2,400 that you save. Now you calculate what are the closing costs and at what point is it a break even? It might not pay to refinance. So you have to look at that, and your loan officer or a good realtor like those at the McLeod Group can help you with that too.
Well, and I would suspect most people, it's that monthly payment is where their focal point is. And of course, you know, that goes up simply because of taxes and insurance and those other things. So having the opportunity to look into those and going, would this make financial sense to do something to lower that monthly payment? Because that's where my thought process always is.
Yeah. Right. Right. Yeah. We're seeing a lot of increased payments really around insurance. So shopping your insurance each year. And then just remembering that voting has consequences. So you got to be watching. You should be looking for those fiscal conservatives. And every time you think a good program, a social program is a good thing, just remember it's going to show up in your property taxes or.
Oh, it's just the cost of a latte. Come on.
A lot of lattes is what I'm paying for these days.
So. I don't do the latte. I make my coffee at home. Rather, excuse me. The mustache makes my coffee at home.
Well, I can be outrageously offended because I don't drink coffee at all and I'm paying for lattes. So.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Nobody asked me.
Yeah.
So is anything, real estate in general goes up. Does anything is anything depreciating, or is it all pretty much you're going to see some gain?
Well, you can't say carte blanche for every single property.
Right,
but
right.
Really, vast majority. If you're maintaining your house, you will see an appreciation. Right now, it's at approximately 1-2%. Now, we were seeing double-digit appreciation during the unicorn years.
Yep.
That, you know what? That was just a gift from God. And buyers should erase those interest rates. Sellers should erase the conditions that allowed them to sell houses without seeing lower offers, without seeing closing costs, without seeing requests for buy downs. Those days are gone. So now you have to be in the market. You have to be in it to win it.
I actually had a conversation with a friend of mine. I believe they bought around 2018-19. So they were on the upswing. Yeah. Well, and their interest rate is a little below fours.
Yep.
They're in the upper threes. And he has a long-term plan of we're going to do this, and we're going to sell our house, we're going to move, we're going to do these things. And just like you said, the increased value of their house at this point has got him kind of contemplating, do I take that jump now simply because we can cash out with a nice profit made from these years?
Yeah, and they can cash out and look at purchasing another property and taking some of that, you know, equity that they did. And if we can't get the seller to do it, then take some of your equity and buy down your interest rate permanently. So three points, say on a $400,000 mortgage, would cost you about $12,000. And that would get you from 6.5 down to 6. Or if you're FHA, from 6.25 down to 5.75. So there's lots of ways that you can skin a cat. And sometimes we can get those closing costs out of a seller.
Yeah, definitely. It's like, skin a cat. What?
I forgot. I'm sorry, Miss Cat Lady.
Oh, I'm not a cat. I'm a crazy cat lady. I used to be. I'm not anymore. I got over it. But yeah, you're right. There's lots and lots of options. And when you've got really good, dedicated professionals who really know their business, you're really in good shape to do that. We're coming up on the bottom of the hour. We're going to take a break for the news. We're going to have to say goodbye to Grant on the phone, but we will have him back again because lots of good information. And again, this is Real Estate Insights Tuesday. Come on back.
The Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance, continues. Here are Denise and Hunter on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers at Noon is brought to you by Green Acres Landscape and GA at Home.
All righty, welcome back, everybody. Real Estate Insights Tuesday with Amy McLeod from the McLeod Group, Keller Williams. Great having Grant Eggleston on from Envoy Mortgage. He had to go. He was via phone, joining us via phone. So I look forward to having him in studio with us next time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that'd be good.
Yeah, lots of great information from him. Okay, so are these dog days of summer? Is that what we're in right now?
Oh, yeah.
Are we in the dog days of summer?
Well, I think some of our buyers out there are in the dog days of summer. And if they've been thinking about buying a home and they're spending the summer sitting on the sidelines, I want to talk about something that doesn't always get much attention. And that's that late summer can create some very interesting opportunities for buyers.
Oh, do tell.
Well, I'm not saying every home is suddenly a bargain or that buyers hold all the cards, because real estate is never quite that simple. But here in Salem, as we move forward toward the end of summer, I can't believe that. The dynamics of the market can shift, and buyers who understand these changes may find opportunities they didn't have earlier in the season. So think about what happens in real estate during spring and summer, early summer. Families want to move before the next school year. Mm-hmm. The weather's beautiful. Homes show well. Buyers have been waiting through the winter, and everyone is ready to make a move at once. But late summer can feel a little different. Vacations are happening, school is approaching, schedules are changing, and there are sellers whose homes have been on the market for a while. So imagine a seller who listed their home earlier in the summer expecting it to sell quickly. Maybe they started a little too high, they've been stepping it down, maybe they had an offer that fell apart, maybe the home simply didn't get the attention they expected, and now several weeks have passed, and they're starting to look at the calendar differently. Does it mean they'll accept any offer that comes along? Of course not. But it may mean they're more willing to have a conversation, because price is not the only thing that we can negotiate in a real estate transaction. Depending on the property, the seller's situation, there may be opportunities to negotiate closing costs, repairs, possession dates, even assistance that can help with financing, like Grant was talking about. The down payment assistance program is one way, but the seller might be a down payment assistance partner. And sometimes getting favorable terms can be just as meaningful or more meaningful to a buyer as getting a lower purchase price. As an example, I was showing a buyer the other day that you could ask for $12,000 in closing costs to buy down your rate that would change your payment $150. Mm. To get that on purchase price, you would have to ask the seller to come down $25,000.
Oh, wow.
Way better for both parties. I mean, this buyer gets what they want. Seller has half the cost. So I would also say that sometimes the house that everyone has overlooked in the spring and summer deserves a second look, because we live in a world where buyers see new listings almost immediately.
Yeah.
But after a home's been listed for a few weeks, buyers sometimes start assuming there must be something wrong with it.
Mm-hmm.
And that isn't necessarily true. It might have been overpriced when it first came on the market. Sometimes the timing was bad. Sometimes the photographs didn't do it justice. And that's why one of my favorite late summer strategies is to look beyond just the newest listings. I've told you we were shopping for a house. We found one.
Yeah.
We kept looking at everything that was on the market and watching them. And so instead of asking what came on the market today, ask yourself what's been sitting and why. And then now we also have to talk about interest rates, because they're part of almost every buying conversation today.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very tempting to say, I'll just wait and maybe they'll come down, maybe they won't. But here's the challenge. If rates improve enough to bring a large number of buyers back into the market, you may get a better interest rate, but you could also have more competition for the same house,
exactly,
driving the price up and negating the interest rate reduction. So rather than trying to perfectly time interest rates, I'd encourage you to look at the whole financial picture. What's the payment you want? What can you comfortably afford? What are the closing costs and how are we going to get them? What terms might we negotiate? And most importantly, does buying this particular home make sense for your life and your long-term plan? Because the goal isn't simply to get the lowest interest rate. It's to make a good real estate decision.
Mm-hmm.
So late summer can sometimes give buyers something that's very valuable in real estate, and it's called a little bit of breathing room.
Mm-hmm.
So if I were working with a buyer in Salem right now, I wouldn't just be looking at what was listed in the last 24 hours. I'd look at houses that have been on the market longer. I'd watch for price reductions. I'd look at houses that went pending and then came back on the market, because a lot of buyers are getting scared and then there's nothing wrong with the house. They write the offer, it gets accepted, and they go, oh, we want to pull out. I'd want to know where the sellers may have flexibility, and then I'd match those opportunities against what a particular buyer is needing. Because a good deal is a home that works for you with financing that you can comfortably manage on terms that make sense for your situation.
Mm-hmm.
So later, you know, this being late summer, this may actually be the time to take another look. And because markets have rhythms, an opportunity often appears when fewer people are paying attention.
So this is something, as a buyer, I could be out there poking around the different real estate sites and broadening out my search criteria to not just newer listing. I don't need necessarily a realtor at that phase, right? I can just start looking around and go, hey, like the ones they've been on the market or there was a pending and I can find those. Or do you recommend that that's just something I could do by myself?
You can do it solo.
Uh-huh.
I'd always have a conversation with a realtor. I mean, you can like, I sat on realtor.com. Nice thing about realtor.com, it's intuitive and it starts to see what you're searching. It looks at your price, you know, what are you searching? And then it will deliver to you new listings, of course, mm-hmm. but price reductions or properties that have come back on the market. But talking to a realtor is going to allow, for some people, it's really the house seems to be the big roadblock, because so many people have been trained, there's only one way. You got to have so much down, so much closing costs, and I can't afford it.
Mm-hmm.
But if you talk to a realtor, they have good realtors, like the people on my team, have mm-hmm. they're going to listen to your situation, and we're going to come up with options and solutions and things you may never have thought of. I mean, one of the things that I'm talking to my baby boomer peers as they're telling me that their kids will never be able to afford a house is, well, did you know that you can give them a gift of $15,000 a year? for each one of your children. So if you have a daughter and a son-in-law, you could give them the each $15,000 for $30,000 that would allow them now to go buy a house instead of when they're 50 or 60 years old and you pass away.
Yeah.
And you give them this big chunk of money. Give it to them now so that they can get their opportunity to get a hedge against inflation by having that starter home. So those are some of the things that we can talk about. There's options with, you know, retirement accounts. Mm-hmm. There's, and like I said, right now, sellers, it's challenging right now. If you're, unless you're in this market to win it, you probably shouldn't be in the market. You've got to be in it to win it.
Yeah. And that really is a flip from just a few years ago.
100%.
Because it was upside down the other way.
Yeah. It's very hard for sellers, but see, that's an opportunity for buyers to come in and say, okay, I'll pay you full price, but I want you to help me with closing costs. I want you to give me 3% closing costs. Closing costs only run about 3.5%. That's what Grant mm-hmm. was saying. He had a mm-hmm. buyer who only had to pay for an appraisal. That was $750.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. So you're missing out on opportunities for creativity to help you get into your house. But I want all my baby boomer friends to think about how could you bless your children now, your adult children now, that would really, really help them if you have it to give.
Mm-hmm. Well, especially as we're hitting that, what a month or so from now, school is back in session. Mm-hmm. And I know as a parent of kids, the last thing you want to do is kind of cause a chaos of starting school somewhere else and having to move somewhere. And then, of course, we're in Oregon. So that means that as fall comes, you may get some rainy, adverse weather. And who wants to move stuff around in a rainstorm or
moving
worse yet?
In the rain.
And then, of course, the days get shorter and shorter. So we're, you know, a couple of months from dark at 5 p.m.
Yeah, given the alternative you just described, yeah, this would be a fabulous time to purchase a house. And get it done.
And we haven't resolved the daylight savings time standard time nope. thing again. So we're probably going to fall back. So mm-hmm.
yeah.
Yay.
Yeah. But just so you know, people do move in the fall and the winter.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. No, it
we're
happens.
Oregonians. We throw our hood up. No.
No umbrellas. No umbrellas.
No umbrellas. No, that's for
it's
weak.
Like you're not from around here.
That's
are
right.
You?
That's right. Too much equipment.
All right, let's go ahead and take our last break. We're talking real estate insights with Amy McLeod. You're listening to Newsmakers at Noon on 1430 KYKN.
Now back to the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers at Noon is brought to you by Cozy's New York Deli.
Alrighty, we're wrapping up our conversation today with Amy McLeod and the McLeod Group and Keller Williams. Again, at the beginning of the show, it was great to have Grant Eggleston from Envoy Mortgage joining us. I'm sure he will be with us again in the future. That was wonderful. So we're going to close out here. I like this one. So many things. It's local, local, local. A lot of people in politics and all kinds of things focus at the national level and not at the local level. So talk to us about why local strategy matters more than national headlines when we're talking the market.
Well, there's something that people need to remember, and that there is really no single housing market, even in Salem.
Yeah.
You know, there's not a single housing market. Real estate is local and sometimes can be hyper-local. Mm-hmm. In fact, it's so local that what happens in one neighborhood may look very different from what's happening just a few miles away. We've seen that in the statistics where West Salem is marching to its own tune over there.
Yeah.
And that's why making a real estate decision based solely on national headlines can be a little like checking the weather in New York before deciding whether you need an umbrella or a hood here in Salem.
No umbrellas.
Yeah. So it's interesting information, but it's probably not what you should base your day on. National housing statistics are useful because they help us understand broad trends. But when we're deciding whether to buy or sell a home, move up, downsize, stay still, what's most important is what's happening right here in our local market, in your particular price range, in your particular location. So let me give you an example. You might hear a national report saying home inventory is increasing. Mm-hmm. That sounds like buyers suddenly have lots of choices and sellers have more competition. But what if homes similar to yours and your part of Salem are still relatively scarce? So for instance, mm-hmm. Central Salem, closer to downtown, those affordable houses, they were perking along a lot better than some of the expensive stuff over in West Salem.
Yeah.
So maybe inventory is growing overall, but the increase is concentrated. So there's two very different markets, and the same thing happens with home prices. And a headline might say prices are rising or falling, but that number combines thousands of communities and millions of homes, and it doesn't necessarily tell us what a three-bedroom home in South Salem is doing. So what buyers are willing to pay in West Salem, or how demand differs between an entry-level and higher-priced house. And then interest rates are important, but they're only one part of the equation. So if you're a buyer waiting for the perfect interest rate, that means you could miss the right house. And if you're a seller waiting for a national headline to declare it's officially a good time to sell, may not make sense if buyers are already actively looking for exactly the kind of property you own. So the better question isn't, is this a good market? The better question is this a good market for what I'm trying to accomplish? Because a first-time home buyer will have a different strategy than someone who already owns a home. A seller who needs to relocate has different considerations than someone who can wait 6 months. And even two sellers living on the same street may need completely different scenarios. So the market matters, but your circumstances matter just as much. And that's where local strategy becomes so important. Good real estate advice should not begin with, here's what the national market is doing. Mm-hmm. It should begin with the question, what are you trying to accomplish? If your realtor is not asking you what your goal is, what your timeline is, and then talking to you about, you know, how your house fits into that, you have a challenge. So even asking, you know, I'm thinking about selling my house in 6 months, and asking me to tell you what your house is going to be worth, is even looking at what the value of it is today, is kind of an exercise in futility.
Okay.
Because what buyers are purchasing in the price range now may not be what they're doing in 6 months. We don't know what the competition is that you would face. And if you're buying, how much negotiating power you have for the type of home you want can change from market to market. That's why we're encouraging buyers, get out now. This is the best time I've seen this year, and the best time I'm expecting to see before the end of the year, because they're telling us, they're warning us that the feds are probably going to raise interest rates.
Okay.
Yeah. So the answers to these questions that buyers and sellers ask, really, we have to build a strategy around their situation rather than headlines. And the other element that people forget is that the market can change before the headlines catch up. So, you know, we've talked about, the spring buying market. And I've shared with you all, the spring buying market is a reflection of buyers who were in the market in January, February, March, because they're counting solds. But you're a buyer who's in the market. So real estate data is often backward looking. We call it the rear view mirror, which is relatively small in your car compared to the front windshield.
Oh, that's a good analogy.
Yeah. You're looking at what happened behind you in a but oh man, it's hitting you hard coming at you. So the market can change before headlines catch up. And the numbers we may be describing are activities from weeks, even months ago. So while good real estate professionals are looking at lots of data to try and determine what's going on. Are we getting multiple offers? Right now, buyers? No, we're not. Mm-hmm. Are buyers negotiating harder? Buyers sitting on the sidelines? Yes, you can. Homes are sitting? Yes, they are. Which ones are selling quickly? We can find those for you. Are sellers offering concessions? Those that have been sitting on the market 30 days or more? Probably willing to consider some sort of concessions.
Yeah.
So these details tell us what the market feels like today, not just a report that tells us what was happening. So if you're thinking about making a move, don't ignore the national news. Just keep it in perspective. Check it with your local expert, because the local data tells you what's happening in your own backyard. And if you're buying or selling one home in one neighborhood at one price point at one particular time, you are not selling in the U.S. housing market. And here in Salem, that distinction matters. And really, where you are in Salem, this is not a cookie cutter community. We've got variety. That's why Zillow is such a poor gauge most homes in Salem because they rely on cookie cutter.
So. Right. And every time, we'll start out with stats usually when we come in, and each of the, they're very different. Like you said, West Salem is doing its own thing versus, Southeast Salem, Northeast Salem, Kaiser. They're all their own little thing there, little universe.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really kind of interesting. It's fun to try and keep ahead of it. I had a coffee yesterday with somebody who was saying to me, I want to do a program on affordability, that Kaiser's so much more affordable than Salem. And I said, well, that would have been true 10 years ago, but now it's not. And he was puzzled. He said, well, why not? And I said, well, because during COVID, the Portland market discovered the affordability of Kaiser, and you combine that with working from home, and there's a whole lot of people that move down from Portland to take advantage of those taxes and those prices. Well, now they're equivalent to South Salem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And even when you were still kind of commuting, Kaiser was always great that way because it was a quick jump on right onto I-5 and up you go. And it's a pretty fast commute, relatively speaking.
Yeah. It's still that. But the real big change was working from home. And so they can come to Northern, Kaiser, work from home and have really affordable prices at the time when COVID began.
Yeah.
Compared to Portland, which then drove it up. It's no longer the affordable option over, like South Salem.
Yeah. Yeah.
We were comparing like Willark Park to Sunny Slope.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. There used to be like a $10,000 to $15,000 differential in price. Not anymore.
Not anymore.
No.
No. Oh, Kaiser's growing up.
In more ways than maybe we like.
Yeah. I know. Well, it's interesting. You talk about, we got about a couple minutes left with you. You're not gauging, like you said, the weather in New York to plan your day in Oregon. But there are sometimes national things do kind of affect the market. And when there's uncertainty in the economy, that definitely will affect it.
Yeah. I think when you hear those headlines and you're coming at a professional realtor, rather than saying, well, the market's up, say, coming at it with a question, curiosity, is the market up here? Is it up in Kaiser, or is it up in Salem? What's going on in my neighborhood? So that would be more useful to open that dialogue, coming curiosity to see what's going on here. And as if you're not using our team, because we'll do this as a matter of course, ask your professional to provide you with the statistics, the data that backs up what they say. Please, please, please don't just take what a realtor says verbally. Ask them to back it up, because it should be backed up with data that they can provide you. We will.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And that's so important. And again, having somebody who really knows the local area that you want to be buying in.
Exactly.
It almost seems somebody who's spread out so sort of very, very shallow and thin wouldn't have as much, knowledge that you might need to really dig into that market where you are. And that's super valuable.
Yeah. I've always been a proponent of using your local expert, not connecting with, your cousin in California, or not California, your cousin in Portland knows a good realtor in Portland and sends you down here with a Portland realtor. They don't know the issues. And that's part of what your realtor's job is, to know the issues. For instance, your Portland realtor brings you to West Salem not knowing that we've got bridge construction ahead of us that may affect your value, or may affect your ability to really strongly negotiate.
Yeah. Great advice as always, Amy McLeod, the McLeod Group, Keller Williams. Always great to have you on, Amy. Again, and all this links will be up in show notes. We just appreciate your wisdom on this, Amy. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
All right, everybody. That's it for us today. We'll see you tomorrow.
This has been the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance. Live local talk that matters to you. Exclusively on 1430 KYKN, where Salem is listening.